No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome in to the Rockies Insider. I'm your Rockies Insider, Patrick Lyons, talking about a nice victory, a happy flight for those Colorado Rockies finishing off their weekend in Milwaukee with a W. What does that mean going forward? Who's coming up this weekend? Some cycle history going on in Major League Baseball, some minor league news as well for the Rockies, as always. But the Rockies, going into Sunday, they were looking to avoid back-to-back series sweeps, as well as their 13th sweep of the season, which is really bad. Their 12 sweeps up to that point already was the most in franchise history before the All-Star break. The previous high was 9. And they are already at 12. They're going to stay at 12 because they did win on Sunday. Was an exciting game more towards the end than in the beginning, but there was excitement in the beginning as well. They have a franchise record of 15 sweeps, and that was 2 years ago in 2023. The record before that was their expansion season when they didn't exist the year prior to that, and they brought everybody in. They got everyone's discarded pieces in 1993. They were swept 14 times then. 15 times in 2023. Right now they're at 12. All it's going to take is 3 to tie, 4 to go ahead. And the schedule, while I think it's going to be a little bit easier, they did already get the Nationals. They did already get the Marlins. They've got that home series against the White Sox, but Colorado has not been playing well at home. So we'll see what happens there if they can at least avoid getting swept, which is the biggest thing. The biggest thing right now, really, for the Rockies is the big question mark surrounding Hunter Goodman and his health and his hamstring strain, because you got to expect a decision coming soon, Tuesday perhaps, because I don't think you can really continue to run Braxton Fulford out there every game. He started 4 straight. You throw in the fact that Sunday's 4-3 win in 11 innings was an 11-inning game. You're looking at 38 innings over 4 days. I think it helped that you didn't have a day game after a night game. But, you know, you did have a night game on Friday after a day game on Thursday, so that's fine. And then Saturday, it wasn't a day game. It was like a late afternoon, early evening game. So, you know, not the typical 24 hours between games, but it wasn't that immediate turnaround that a night game followed by a day game can present. So he was still out there to do that, and he'll get the day off today on Monday. But after that, you know, you're not going to be able to utilize him on Wednesday night and then Thursday afternoon. And then again, another series coming up right after that. You know, they don't have another off day for a little while. In fact, I don't think their next off day is until the All-Star break after this Monday. Yeah, they won't get a day off until July 10th, then 3 in Cincinnati, and then it'll be the All-Star break. So should expect a decision with Goodman. You know, does he end up going on the IL? Do they maybe even wait until Tuesday afternoon and see, all right, is Goody going to be able to go on Wednesday? And if not, then you make that call on Tuesday. Drew Romo gets up and you know, is activated. And even then, at that point, Goodman has already missed, what, close to 7 days? So it would really only be for about 4 days or so. So it wouldn't be so bad. And in fact, at this point, you should probably just err on that side of caution, call up Drew Romo, And you can still start Fulford on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then Thursday give Romo the start. And then if Fulford's back out there again on the 4th of July against the White Sox, you can even run him out there again on July 5th against the White Sox on Saturday. And then maybe at that point on July 6th, next Sunday, Goodman, who would be eligible to come back by that point, I believe, can go ahead and start, and you're going to be all right. So you only then need Romo once, but you can't be left out there using your emergency catcher in Kyle Farmer, who, look, that could cost you a game if you're taking such an extreme step back defensively in your catchers. It's one thing if it's an emergency, but once you tap into that emergency, I mean, that opens the door to the running game for the opposing team. So a decision definitely needs to be coming one way or another in terms of Hunter Goodman's health and the state of his hamstring strain. So Sunday, they win 4-3 in 11 innings. And man, that was just a game that at a certain point deep into it, it felt like they just weren't going to win for multiple reasons. Now, they entered Sunday as the only team in Major League Baseball without a win in extra innings. And then they finally get it done. It was, as I said earlier, kind of an entertaining game, not quite as much from the start, but there was some entertainment early as Warren Schaefer got his money's worth with his first ejection as the Rockies' interim manager. Tyler Freeman struck out on a pitch that it did appear to be in that, well, I don't want to say Subaru strike zone because I don't think we're calling it that anymore. It was in the box, and I went and looked on StatCast, and it was also a strike. But Freeman didn't like it. Not sure what he said. Not sure it mattered what he said. I think it was that he pointed at the home plate umpire, and that was what prompted the ejection. And so Warren Schaefer ran out of the dugout, said a couple words, then realized that his quote-unquote gum, was in his way. So he took the wad of gum out of his mouth, spiked it, realized, okay, I might as well do my hat too. Boom, spike that. He's getting ejected. And then as he, actually before he runs off, he goes over to the plate, very demonstrative. Is that going to be a one-game suspension? No, I don't. I think managers do that or players do that. I don't know. You don't see it that much. The last time I remember a guy going crazy like that, I think was what, in 2023? And it was on our buddy Angel Hernandez with Kyle Schwarber on Sunday Night Baseball, you know, standing in front of home plate like, hey, you're calling balls way over here in this batter's box. And then strikes over here in that batter's box. Like that's, you know, Schaefer wasn't that demonstrative, but he got down like on one knee saying, hey, you're calling strikes all the way down here, bud. He really let Ramon De Jesus know how low his zone was there, even though it was actually a strike. So he gets his money's worth. And then as he's walking away, he comes back and, you know, I'm not a John Boy level lip reader, but it was enough. I'm good enough to know that Schaefer did say, hey, what did he say exactly? Like, he just wanted to know, like, hey, just so we know going forward. And like I said, I don't know that it was that he said something so much as it was the finger point. I think that's maybe what got him tossed. So we'll see if he gets a suspension. Probably not. But that was a good one. And that, hey, his team ended up coming back, rallying to get the win. You know, I don't know that there's a total correlation between every ejection and comeback wins and things of that nature, but that was nice. Schaefer standing up for his guy for multiple reasons. And that was nice to see. The guys end up getting the victory to prompt the happy flight out of Milwaukee back to Denver. And with that ejection, that did mean on the top step was bench coach Clint Hurdle for the first time for the Colorado Rockies since May 27th, 2009, 2 days before he would get fired. But that was just under 6,000 days ago. How many days exactly? Okay, I'll tell you. 5,877 days ago, Clint Hurdle last was the manager of the Rockies in an official capacity. But he gets the win, as does Schaefer. They can share that. I commented about, you know, them coming from behind, getting the win. One of the followers commented on Twitter that, hey, Clint was back in the driver's seat for the win. And Clint Hurdle, who is prominent, is active on the social media. He's got a book that he just put out, so he's promoting that. He commented on that comment in the thread under my post with a gif of Andy Bernard, aka the Nard Dog. You might know him as Ed Helms, from The Office, spinning around in his chair and greeting the camera with a cheeky smile. So that was funny from Clint. I got to tip the cap to him. And hey, props to Germán Márquez. Props to Germán Márquez because, you know, his performance, I think, got lost in this game, and, you know, rightfully so. When you score four runs, you score a run in the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. But Márquez has been pitching really well. Certainly helps that the six runs that he gave up in his last start against the Dodgers, you know, two of those runs got wiped away, and then all six of them ended up getting wiped away. So it was a scoreless performance in the earned run category. But he entered Sunday with a 2.63 ERA over his previous seven starts going back to May 22nd. That's actually the 10th lowest ERA in the National League, minimum seven starts, since May 22nd. So he's been pitching really well. He hasn't had a string like that since he had a 2.33 ERA in his All-Star season in 2021. And it wasn't in that first half. It was actually a little bit after that. The dates in the Rockies notes were a little bit off, but the final of his seven starts was August 8th. So I think it went back to like June 29th. So a little bit before the All-Star break. But anytime you can compare yourself to a younger version of yourself pre-Tommy John when you were an All-Star, pretty damn good. Now, it was a 0-0 score going into the sixth inning, and Márquez did give up a pair of solo home runs. And those were the only hits that the Brewers had until we got deep into this game. And yet that 2-0 lead felt absolutely insurmountable for the Rockies because they had a string of 17 consecutive scoreless innings going back to Friday night. They got absolutely dominated, shut out on Saturday, and they didn't score in the 9th on Friday night. They didn't score in the first seven innings on Sunday until Brenton Doyle came through with an RBI double that scored McMahon, gave them a little bit of momentum there. And then Orlando Arcia with two outs in the 9th behind 0-1 on Brewers closer Trevor McGill, who has not given up a lot of home runs this season. He has quietly had one of the better first halves of any closer in the game. He continues to be a really solid pickup for the Brewers. And Arcia continues to be clutch. Don't forget, he's got the only walk-off hit this season for the Rockies. And so Arcia doing it against the team that he came up with. I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but Arcia was a top 100 prospect. I can remember going to games in 2015, 2016 down in Colorado Springs when the Sky Sox were the AAA affiliate for the Brewers. When the Rockies decided to go away, they knew that Colorado Springs was no longer going to have a AAA affiliate in a couple years. So they traded in the Sky Sox for the Albuquerque Isotopes. That obviously turned out to be a great decision for them. But Arcia was a big prospect, a shortstop prospect for the Brewers for a while, and does it against his former team with a nice home run that, believe it or not, would not have been a homer at Coors Field. And I bring that up because that's some of the luck that really hasn't been going the Rockies' way this season. Now, you got to make your own luck, no doubt about it. But the Rockies, in a neutral game in which they play just as well as the other team, the luck usually is going away from them. There's been a couple times, I mean, we saw it against the Nationals where it was kind of a neck and neck game and the luck kind of went their way, as it should. Like it's gonna fall 50-50 on average, but if you're bad, you're gonna be bad. That's why it was, I believe it was Earl Weaver that said, you lose a third of the games and you're gonna win a third of the games. It's the what happens in the other 40 some games in a season that determines what your final win-loss record is going to be. I don't know why I don't know why my quick math was so bad in the 50 some games. But that's true because it's like half. Like you're splitting everything in half, and yeah, I know that's literally thirds. But half of the two-thirds you're gonna win, half the two-thirds you're gonna win. It's what happens in those other thirds. And you know what? the Rockies got one there. So yeah, that one goes out in Milwaukee. Wouldn't have gone out in Coors Field. It's about time something goes the Rockies' way. And Colorado, think about this. Since they acquired Orlando Arcia, and since he debuted on May 28th, the Rockies are 9-11 in games he's played. 9 wins in 20 contests that have appeared. Or rather, they're 9-11 with Orlando Arcia. I think they've lost more because he hasn't played in every game. But 9 wins since May 28th, since they picked up Orlando Arcia. And before, pre-Orlando Arcia era, 9 wins in, 55 games before he signed? There's something to that. He has definitely helped the Rockies really shed that exoskeleton of one of the worst starts ever. Now, they're so far behind in the worst start that they continue to have, you know, one of the worst starts ever or most losses through X amount of games, 84. But he has helped keep them a lot looser. He has definitely contributed to that. So it's nice to see Orlando Arcia doing it yet again. In the 10th inning, Isaac Collins made a great catch, crashed into the wall, broke the gate, and Sam Hillier did a wonderful job to tag up and get over to third base. Told you the impact that Isaac Collins is having this year. Well, he literally had an impact on the wall. Tyro Estrada pulled through with an RBI single for his third hit of the day. Bottom of the 10th, Rockies should have lost, period. There is no way the Rockies should have won this game based on how the bottom of the 10th started. Here are the first 4 entries on the game day summary if you're going and looking at MLB.com. A single to Sal Frelick, immediately tied at 3-3. A wild pitch allowed Frelick to move to second base, then a walk to Jackson Churio, then an injury delay. Vodnik got something in his eye. You got runners on first and second with no outs, and then Yelich hits into an apparent double play. That should be a good thing, but no. Overturned, we've got runners on the corner with only one out, and Vodnik gets out of his own self-induced jam. William Contreras flies out to very shallow right field. You're not going to run on Sam Hilliard in right. You wouldn't run on me. It was that shallow. So that's fine. But Yelich eventually advanced to second base on defensive indifference, and Bryce Terang struck out. Top of the 11th, Kyle Farmer got the RBI single to score. Doyle and then Kinley earned the save. 1-2-3, 2 strikeouts and a flyout to end it. Cue the happy flight. Great for the Rockies to have that victory when they had only 2 hits for, or rather, the Brewers had only those 2 hits for the majority of the game, yet they were homers. And were it not for that, and were it not for extras, you know, maybe the Rockies would have been able to snap a consecutive games played streak. I'll give a tip of the cap to Patrick Saunders because he noted this in the game notes before I did. But the Rockies have gone now 203 consecutive games allowing at least 1 run. It's their longest streak without a shutout in the modern era. They surpassed the 1939 St. Louis Browns, which later became the Baltimore Orioles. The Rockies' previous franchise record was 169 games, basically from their birth until the next year. They didn't have a single shutout that entire first year as an expansion franchise, which again, picked up players off of the scrap heap. The original existing 26 team said, here are the players we want to keep and you can have what's left over. And that was the longest streak between shutouts, which makes sense. So for this to happen to a modern day club only further underlines how poorly this roster was assembled and how poor of a job the front office did in monitoring their assets going back a few years ago, which if you listen to me when I was on DNVR Rockies, these are some of the things that I was saying. I had no way of knowing it was going to get this bad, but they did a lot of things wrong. They continue to do a lot of things wrong. And until they do things right, we are still 4 or 5 years away from this thing getting figured out. I digress. Rockies' last shutout was last May in San Diego. Austin Gomber had 6 scoreless frames. And then how about this trio? Justin Lawrence, Nick Mears, Peter Lambert finished off the shutout. Wow. You want to go back to the last shutout at home at Coors Field? How about against the then Oakland Athletics, July 30th, 2023. We're approaching 2 years between a shutout at Coors Field. Who are the pitchers? I'd argue this list is even better. Ty Block got the start. Let's go. Matt Cook, Brent Suter, Daniel Bard, and Justin Lawrence again. How about that? So you say, all right, who had the last shutout for the Rockies on the road and who had the last one at home? Justin Lawrence, a part of both of them. Legend. Saturday was a 5-0 loss. They got shut out. Only one hit. Quinn Priester had himself a career day, 7 shutout frames with a career high 11 strikeouts. Michael Tolley was the only offense. He ended up reaching second base, but it was on a wild pitch. That's it. One runner in scoring position, and it was thanks to a wild pitch. First time suffering a one-hit shutout since last May in Pittsburgh. Actually, correction, I don't think it was Tolia that reached second. It was someone who walked, and I think that was maybe in the eighth inning. But, man, that was really rough. Senzatella was fine. You know, he did reach his 500 strikeout in that game. Good for him. The ball did come out. So they were able to get it authenticated. It did have me thinking, though, how many players since Antonio Senzatella debuted in 2017 have reached 500 strikeouts? I figured a lot, but it was actually a lot more than that. 161 pitchers, including 11 relievers who have never started a game, have reached 500 strikeouts since 2017, which, hey, that's a long time. That's almost a decade. You had all the great closers of the past decade, Josh Hader, Craig Kimbrell, Roldis Chapman, Kenley Jansen, Edwin Diaz. You also had Adam Ottavino. You also had Spencer Strider, who has 500 strikeouts in just 75 starts, only 371 and 2/3 innings pitched. So fewest of any pitcher on that list.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit Hims.com/Hail Mary. That's Hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. Hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You also had Rick Porcello, who did it over 4 seasons from 2017 to 2020, which was a shortened season. He hasn't pitched in the majors since then. Masahiro Tanaka also has not pitched since 2020. He was on that list. Some others who did it in not a very high strikeout to 9 ratio. Jose Urania also has 500 strikeouts since 2017. Antonio Senzatella, 5.8 strikeouts per 9. So it's one of the reasons why it took him so long to get there. Also missing basically 2 full seasons because he had Tommy John surgery. You also have on this list 3 players who debuted in 2022, meaning a full 6 seasons after Senzatella debuted: George Kirby, Hunter Greene, Mackenzie Gore. I also searched for pitchers with at least 768 and a third innings pitched. That's what Senzatella had going into Saturday. At least 10.6 hits per 9. So they're letting a lot of guys on with hits. And 5.8 strikeouts per 9 or less. Only 38 players came up in the history of baseball. 24 in the modern era, so since 1901, but only 6 in the expansion era since 1961. Pitchers strike out a lot more guys. They give up a lot less hits. They strike out a lot more batters. Antonio Senzatella is the only one beyond or since 2012 to have that many innings pitched, give up that many hits, and strike out that few amount of hitters. Nick Blackburn was that other guy. What was also interesting of the other 5 players since 1961 to miss so few bats. Also on that list was Mike Maroth, who lost 20 games with the Detroit Tigers in 2003, the last to lose 20 games. Antonio Senzatella has 11 losses so far. There's no way, by the way, he reaches 20 losses. There is no chance that he reaches 20 losses. There'll be a phantom IL stint at some point, and it really won't be phantom because, let's face it, every player would benefit from a 10-day stint on the IL. Every guy is beat up. Every guy is dragging. That's what makes baseball players such grinders. You are a grinder if you play baseball. You have to be. You just have to be. So you know, is he beat up? Yeah. Is that a way to limit his innings because he is just coming back from Tommy John? Yeah, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But you put him on the IL for 15 days, which is the minimum for pitchers, and that right there is going to be three starts. And, you know, maybe he needs a little bit longer than that. Don't forget, Ryan Feltner is on the comeback trail. Tanner Gordon is not too far behind as well. Not that he is necessarily, you know, viewed by many as an upgrade. I think he's been nice. I think he deserves another shot. And, you know, there's a few other guys. And Gabriel Hughes, we know, is going to come up late in the year. So you do need Senzatela to eat up innings. He's really not blocking anybody. Carson Palmquist will come back at a certain point. We're after working on a couple of things down in AAA. Again, all fine. But it's not like you've got a long list of guys that need to get their starts. Because you also need to protect a lot of those young pitchers as well. I just don't think there's any way that he reaches 20 losses. Just like there was no way in 2023 that Ryan McMahon reached 200 strikeouts. I think it's silly. I don't think it matters if you reach 200 strikeouts. But go back and look at the final week and a half for the Rockies. And there were a lot of games in which Ryan McMahon was not in the starting lineup. That was to avoid 200 losses, in my opinion. And then what happened last year? He strikes out 200 times, and so does Ezekiel Tovar, and it's not such a big deal anymore. And I don't think losing 20 games is such a big deal. It's a deal, no doubt about it. It does mean something, but come on, it's not a big deal. All right, in the minors, Kyle Karros, big walk-off home run on Saturday night. Yard Goats were actually down 5-1. They scored 3 in the 8th and 2 in the 9th with Karros's walk-off dinger at Duncan Park in Hartford. Karros now batting .329 on the season. The better and better that he plays, the more likely it is that we see him debut at the end of this year. Does he deserve that debut? Yes. But if there are no plans for him to be on this opening day roster at the beginning of next year, are you wasting a spot? And wasting is a strong word, but it's also a word that, you know, we need to understand. It means taking up a spot that could be used in the offseason, because there are a lot of guys that are on the block for the Rule 5 draft. And on one hand, you say, well, hey, Rockies, you keep pumping up your prospects, but then whenever they come up, they're not really contributing a ton. You also you want to give them as many opportunities as you would think for an organization that pumps up those prospects. And then every time the Rule 5 draft comes around, you're not seeing any Rockies get selected. So how good are these prospects? Nevertheless, there are a lot that need to get protected or else they will be exposed for the Rule 5 draft. So you're going to need all of those spots. Do they have room for those guys? Yes. But if Karros is on that roster, that is one less player that you can protect. Now, all bets are off if Ryan McMahon gets traded. And when you do promote Karros to AAA, he starts playing really, really well. You might as well start his clock and allow him to debut. So I think it's almost a sooner rather than later decision for Karros, rather than late in the year of, hey, here's a ceremonial debut for you. The ceremonial thing doesn't apply to Karros since he doesn't need to be put on the 40-man roster yet. Other guys like a Gabriel Hughes, yeah, because he does need to get protected. So a somewhat ceremonial debut for him makes a little bit more sense. But if Karros, again, once he gets called up to AAA, which could be soon, could be after the Futures game, and if he continues to play well when he's up in AAA in the Pacific Coast League and Ryan McMahon is gone, then I think you could very well see Karros come up even early September, maybe even late August. That's possible. But the deeper we get into September, the less sense it makes to actually call him up. Zach Veen's adjustments in Scottsdale appear to be working. 4-for-5 on Thursday. I mentioned that the other day. 4-for-4 on Friday with 2 doubles. You throw in a 1-for-3 performance on Saturday, and he's got his batting average up to just around .300. So doing a good job making noise. Let's see if he can sustain it. That's really where you're going to show your mettle, and you're going to show, hey, I'm a big league player, not a guy that is close to being big league ready, which you can do in a handful of games. You got to be able to string it together for a few weeks at a time. And I think that's where Veen is at right now in his early and his young career. Final little tidbit that I found interesting. Trey Turner nearly hit for the cycle for the 4th time as a big leaguer, No player has ever done that. He needed a triple on Saturday for the cycle. And what did he do in his final plate appearance? He accidentally hit a home run. And after the game, he said, you know, after I touched home plate, and this thought never crossed my mind before that, but you know, the thought of missing home plate, I think that'd be a triple. Because if you missed home plate, yeah, it would be a triple. But that is such a all about me type move. You don't do that. And he didn't. And that's why it didn't even cross his mind. So good on Trey Turner for that. That's pretty funny. But the list of guys with three cycles, which is just like a fun anomaly. That being said, the guys who have done it are all great players. One Hall of Famer in there, and then a few Hall of Very Good guys. It's Trey Turner, Christian Yelich, who's the only other active player, Adrian Beltre, Hall of Famer, Babe Herman, and Bob Musil. Look up Herman and Musil. Really good players during their day. Now, two cycles, a lot of guys, but among active players, it's only Nolan Arenado and Freddie Freeman. 349 cycles have been recognized by Major League Baseball. Should also be noted that Trey Turner came up a homer shy last month on May 19th at Coors Field. I didn't remember that, to be honest. I should have. I'm all about the cycles, and I'm all about it at Coors Field since Coors has seen the most out of any ballpark. 18. Tied for the most with Fenway Park, that's been around for, 100 years. Coors has seen just as many, which is crazy to think about. But Trey Turner has actually cycled against the Rockies twice in his career. He's the only player to ever do that against the Rockies twice. And oddly enough, both of them came away from Coors Field. That's right. They came at Nationals ballpark. Christian Yelich has not cycled against the Rockies, despite the fact he does have three. So a little fun fact there to end on. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons, MLB. Appreciate you dropping by. Give me some momentum. Go on social media. Follow me over on Rockies Insider on YouTube, because once I hit 500 subscribers, I can monetize and I can do a lot more things and bring you some really great content, even more content that hopefully you're enjoying right now. Please leave a review if and when you get a chance. That goes a long way. Tomorrow, I'm going to be giving you an MLB trade deadline primer. Who are the Rockies likely going to trade? How many more years of club control do certain players have? Who makes sense to trade? And truly, is there any player that should be off limits for the Rockies? Tune in tomorrow. Appreciate the momentum. But as I like to say, that momentum can only be as good as my next show. So, of course, I'll talk to you tomorrow.